I just think you're too eager. No, I'm done. I'm started. I just think you're too eager to get started. I think this should be more trepidation.
I just think you're waiting for something that ain't gonna happen.
I know that. But you're not telling me anything new. I know I'm waiting for something that's not gonna happen. My expectations are rarely met.
Your expectations are crushing the reality of the moment.
I love it. I love it, though. I love how it does that. Here's my idea.
Okay.
Vicky, I was gonna read a little of the book you just sent me.
Oh, great. That's nice.
And then I wanted to talk about books that you sent me.
All right.
Isn't that a good talk?
Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah. So here's the book. Here's the first page or so of the book you just sent me, and people can try to figure it out.
Yeah.
I love the title. The title is, I thought it was a book about me. That's how narcissistic I am. I said, oh, it's called I Don't Know. It must be a book about me. That's my motto.
Well, I did buy it for you, and therefore I
thought it is
you
my book.
To buy it.
And if you think like we do, since I bought the book, the contents are now mine.
They are yours, and they're very much...
Here they are, and I'm using them. Look at that. I'm using this sort of script. Thank you for your book, author. I'm now going to perform it.
Okay.
I don't
know. All of it.
All right, you're stepping on it a little bit. We're going to have to cut that out with a filter.
All right, sorry.
I don't know. I was recently doing voiceover work. I'm sorry. So now I'm saying everything three times, but I only need
it's
to
okay.
say it once. So pick so one you like. Pick the I don't know you like and cut it out. I don't know. I'm not well versed in literature. Sensibility? What is that? What in God's name is an afterword? I don't have the faintest idea. And concerning book design, I am fully ignorant. What is a slipcase supposed to mean again? And what the heck is Boris Wood? The canons of page construction? I don't know what that is. I haven't got a clue. How am I supposed to make sense of traditional Chinese bookbinding? And what the hell is an initial? Containers are a mystery to me. And what about a postbox? And what on earth is the hollow nickel case? An ammunition box? Don't know. Couldn't tell you. And I'm not well versed in postal systems. And I don't know what bulk mail is or what it's supposed to be special about a catcher pouch. I don't know what people mean by bags. What's the deal with the... Arhuacamochila? Oh, I got to a completely unpronounceable phrase. I have to stop now. I'm glad I'm not... Whoops. Could we get somebody in, an intern in here? Tell me what that means, please. So this is a book it's by Gregor Weichbrock, but it really isn't by Gregor. I mean, it is by Gregor Weichbrock, and it's not.
Weichbrot.
Yes. Oh, Weichbrot?
Yeah.
Oh,
do you know what that means, Mr. White?
It means white bread, doesn't it? Or
it
something
means...
like that? Crusty dry bread?
Isn't that ironic?
Mm-hmm. No, I don't
from
know.
One,
no.
But from one right. loaf, from one loaf to another.
So, what am I reading?
I Don't Know by Gregor Weichbrot, where he collected everything that people didn't know and listed it, which I think is the most beautiful Zen-like action that one can behave, which he does repeatedly. And I got you that book because a couple of weeks ago you were very down about something. And I thought, well, I think you should remember how much we don't know. And so I sent it to you then.
And I don't remember. I usually, because I forget a lot, I don't remember being sad. So that's good. And here's what the back of the book says. An algorithm combs through the universe of knowledge known as Wikipedia, beloved by plagiarists of all ages, and saves its entries. A text is generated in which a narrator denies knowing anything about any of these entries. So that's what it is. That's fantastic.
It's beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah, it is beautiful. And the one I'm familiar with is the four... what was it? Four elemental questions? What's the title of that?
The Fundamental Questions.
The Fundamental Questions, which is an awesome, awesome book.
Yeah.
Tell me what that was.
Well, that was where Gregor and I... Well, Gregor started it where he he got in touch with me and he said that he was combing through an online dating site for lots of first person, you know, propositions of who they are, what they are, you know, why they're doing what they do. And I said, well, that sounds like they're trying to find the answers to the fundamental questions in life. They're all searching alone for meaning and for other people. And so then we embarked upon trying to find, well, what are the fundamental questions in life? And then using the algorithms of that dating site to answer it. And the funny thing is, we did the book, and then a few weeks later, the website, which is called something Cupid, they actually got into trouble because it turned out they'd been manipulating the algorithms to test out people in their responses to who they found.
Oh, they were being manipulative. They were
there was a strange afterward to it.
Of course there is. I mean, if somebody is selling you something like love or fulfillment, do you really think you're going to get it? Do you really think it's going to come without with the batteries? You know, that's the thing. It's like, oh, you're going to sell me this? Yes, I'm going to sell you some fulfillment. I'm going to sell you your soulmate. Oh, really? Yeah, here you go. Thank you so much. And if you think the transaction is over, you're deluded. You know, mm-hmm. what they're selling you is a perpetual feeling of emptiness so that they can perpetually almost fill it. And don't ever do that, I think. But, you know, I think somebody is charging you to find happiness, I really encourage you to look elsewhere because it's often free.
But I mean, the internet is molded around our own desires for searching. And then once we find something, we copy it and then we regurgitate it some more. And this is just an emotional version of that exact search is, you know, you're looking for people who, and also the way you represent yourself on the internet or to other people. The internet is like the perfect stage for becoming a new person.
It is, so, and a lot of those red, like, lies that we tell ourselves, you know, like a lot of them were self-limiting or they were people making themselves into, you know, two-dimensional characters or caricatures, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, you say, I am a... you know, I am a romantic at heart, or some crap like that, right? And what you're doing is you're sort of presenting yourself as a stereotype or something, a shorthand. You know, I'm this kind of character, and I don't. You only see that in like used to see that in like sort of Lonely Hearts ads or anything. It isn't like if you spend more than 10 minutes with a person. You can get right through that.
Well, they would become another self within 10 minutes anyway.
Yeah, but that's just a facet. Like, we're all little, probably that's, you're still getting closer to seeing the whole thing, even though nothing is complete. Right, but don't you think?
I mean, the beauty of the algorithm of putting all these I ams together is you can read through it, which is what we did.
Yeah, and it's beautiful. It reads like a long poem.
Yeah, composed by thousands and thousands of lone people mm-hmm. searching together for the same thing, probably.
Right.
And when you read through it, you realise you're actually most of the things within it, which actually highlights what we really are is a series of multiple selves that we switch between in depending upon the environment and the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, if you read the book as if it's coming from a single narrator, a human... Right? Mm. And it's a beautiful thing because you go, oh my word, yeah, man, that's just one longing entity. And it's divided up in space and time. So it you know, it's all these things though. That's just what the human experience.
Yeah.
And that's a beautiful thing to see in one. I like having in one volume like that.
Yeah. I think it's very touching, and we had a group of people read it a couple of times where we printed it out to like 30 people in the room, and gradually more and more people started reading it at the same times until in the end the whole room was reading, I am this, I am that,
right.
It just sounded amazing.
I trust that more, you know, and it's the only book It's almost the only book I trust because it's not written by a single individual, right? And it's written in collaboration with thousands of individuals, and they don't know they're writing it. So,
which also is what all books are, though, because
no,
all books,
they're propaganda written by narcissists. They're one view. No, it's absolute propaganda. It's usually a defense of their own narcissism. Look at this character. Go, oh wow, you really know horrid characters very well. Oh yes, I'm very imaginative. They're just writing autobiography, and they're engaging, I believe, in propaganda for their own, individuality, their own choices.
All right, but supposing it's like a factual book. Supposing it's Hockney on Art, that book.
Right? Oh, so that's a goodie. Well, I don't mind his propaganda. Yeah, but I'm all in on Hockney.
David Hockney in conversation with Paul Joyce, where he's asking David Hockney on his thoughts on art and the wider field of human experience. Mm-hmm. Now, that is a book written by thousands of people, but spoken by two people, because it's a result of a whole journey of two people's lives and what they've experienced as a result of thousands of people. So that's kind of what I meant. By the way, listeners, what are we talking
about
right now?
Don't talk to them. Don't break. What are you doing? They'll answer you.
Shouldn't you read a bit of the fundamental questions?
I can't find it. I can't. I started anyway. I told you, give me a second, but I couldn't find it and I gave up. I don't know where it is. It's usually right
here. I've got it here.
Well, don't read it. It's not, this isn't, Gregor didn't like pay us. I thought we'd move on to other books. This isn't just about the fundamental questions. The premise was that books you sent me, we just got hung up on that one. Because there's a lot of other ones.
Okay.
Like English folklore. I should not even have that in front of me. That's got some, I love that one. Because it's just like a dictionary with things like, mucky dicky or some weird sounding phrase.
Well, it's kind of a thesaurus of all the strange customs that we've collected over the years that that seem nonsensical, but when it's explained to you, you actually it kind of makes sense. I've probably got that book here as well.
And it's like a viewing companion for folk horror. You say, why are they putting that straw horse's head on their head and dancing around? Well, you see, it's part of their pagan ancestry, son. Why are they killing that lady? That's part of their folk horror ancestry, son.
Well, it's a great thesaurus for getting ideas as well.
It is. It is. I like my ideas sort of randomly generated or out of nowhere.
You can't find that one? Because mine's under a pile of 15 books. And
what, the folk one?
Yeah, mine's under 15 books.
I know where it is upstairs. Here's the thing. I mean, I thought we'd just do this live through with no pauses. If I pause, what are you going to talk for? And if I get up also, I have to use the restroom. So if I get up, I'm going to do that too. And then it's like, I think, am I doing a show? I'm using the restroom. I'm getting a book. You know
number
what I'm saying?
Number one or number two? Silence.
Are you asking about the book or my
restroom?
I wouldn't have said restroom. If I wanted to be more specific, I wouldn't have used that crazy euphemism.
Yeah, well, if I wanted to be more specific, it's actually called a toilet.
What is?
We're going to be
That's even more specific. Well, the actual room is a toilet to you?
Yeah, it's a bathroom if it's got a bath in it. It's a toilet if it's the loo, and the restroom is
the loo.
The bedroom or something.
That one gets me, the loo.
Or maybe
I don't say
funeral home.
Y'all
or
say
something.
Loo paper too, don't you?
The restroom is where you go to retire, isn't it?
Do you know what loo paper means here?
What?
Nothing. Doesn't mean anything. We don't have that expression. See? So when you say it, we're like, what?
Yeah, you knew what I was talking about, though.
Well, because I have acquaintances that are impaired linguistically like that. They speak the old way.
I like the way you call them acquaintances rather than friends. It's like you wouldn't be their friend.
No, well, most of my... I don't have any... I'd say that I have two close friends in the UK.
Who are they?
You and Jennifer.
Okay.
And everybody else is is like, some people I haven't even met. They're just pen pals and all.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why I said that. Why do you feel insulted? I mean, I know a lot of people casually.
I can't even remember why.
I don't know what I think we're supposed to be talking about the book.
Yeah, let's just get beyond the restroom, shall we?
So we should just skip the folk one. Because I'll just start reading entries anyway. Nobody wants to hear that. That's interesting. They want to hear is us. Well, how about Roadside Picnic? You sent me that too.
Yeah, I've not read that. I
read it for you. I should have lied about what was in it.
Yeah, I mean, that's a book that I'm into, which I've never read. I have it, but I thought I don't want to read it. So I thought, who can I get to read it?
You should read it, though, because it's so different than Stalker.
Yeah, I mean, my interest in it was because it seems very much like The Wizard of Oz as well.
The actual book is like almost like a prequel. Like he didn't use hardly anything. Like there's things that happen in the book that expand the world a little bit that make it a lot weirder. The Red, is that the stalker's name? Red's his father lives with them, but his father is an animated corpse. So that right, and who drinks vodka and everything, and then Monkey actually looks like a monkey.
Right.
So that's weird. And everybody, you know, kind of acknowledged, yes, there's zombies near the area, near the zone. And that's not emphasized in the movie.
No.
It's more like, is the zone really anything at all? Or is it our imagination? That's not in the book. It's unequivocal. That's something that there's, it's magical and weird. And it makes the dead come back to life.
Right. So is it... do you think that it has got more in common with The Wizard of Oz, or do you think they're totally not related and it's just a
the movie does, for sure. Yeah, he superimposed The Wizard of Oz sort of on it and made Oz an imaginary place, almost a place in the mind like Oz. But the book, it's not like, the book is like, the world has been transformed by this weird visit by aliens. We don't know why they came and what they're left, but it's imagined that this place is inconsequential to them. They just stopped here to get something to eat, and what they left is their garbage.
Right.
So that's they just had a roadside picnic.
Right.
And our world is transformed by just their casual, you know, careless doing their thing.
And this is why you got the book, because then you could explain it to me.
Right, I think it's interesting when a filmmaker does that, where they just sort of use the world almost. I'm gonna use the character in the world, but I'm gonna take them some. I'm gonna put something on it that's more like a journey or quest or something.
Yeah,
the book doesn't.
But it sounds fairly grim as well. I mean, more grim than the movie.
Yeah. Oh, it is grimmer. Yeah. Somebody, because one of the stalker's legs has melted off. And he doesn't really, so he can't really do. I mean, people are gruesomely maimed and everything, and he's far more hunted by the law and everything. It's, it is grim. It is pretty grim. Mm. But I like how the actual not only is the movie grim, okay, Stalker. We're talking about the Tarkovsky movie Stalker, but the actual set was toxic and killed the star and the director, basically.
And as like in Wizard of Oz, the Tin Man got cancer from the silver on the paint on his face.
Right.
And they had to get a new Tin Man.
I don't know that Buddy Ebsen got cancer, but he had a bad reaction to it. I don't mean to correct you.
All right, he had a cosmetic moment.
Because we know Buddy Ebsen is beloved. Well, not really beloved. I think he was horrible. But that was him at first.
Thanks for clarifying.
Only because you don't know who Buddy Ebsen is. You don't have him there.
Sorry.
Do you have Beverly Hillbillies over there?
Yes, of course we do. We get your rubbish, don't we?
Oh, so you know when... I love, my favorite joke is when the Beverly Hillbillies go to England and they say you're going to go through British customs. And so they just think that means to do everything that the other person's doing.
Right.
It's very silly. That's American humor. would
By
be.
The way, I've been watching Maverick. You know, James Garner.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Any opportunity to see James Garner, man.
Absolutely. Oh, my God, it's amazing. Have you seen it?
Oh, not in a while. Should I?
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
It's like the Rockford Files, but even nicer.
Even nicer?
Yeah, he just avoid. You know, in the Rockford Files, he generally plays this character that really doesn't want to, like, get into too much trouble anything. He'd never shoot anyone. He rarely wants to punch anyone. It's normally him that gets punched. It's him that gets done over in Rockford Files. Well, the Maverick character is very much like that.
Oh, that's, yeah, yeah. I'm sure he pretty much played some version of himself. He was never, I don't remember him ever playing a super bad guy or anything.
Not really, no. And James Garner says in his book that those characters, you know, they're not like him. He had an anger management problem in real life.
Yeah, well, he went through a lot of stuff as a kid.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But, I mean, it's going, you know, I'm really not like Jim Rockford. But at the same time, you can tell that it's bringing out that part of his character that is just a very nice chap. But the good thing about Maverick is he actually, things turn out all right for him at the end. He goes in with $1,000 and comes out with $1,000. It's all like that.
So this is another book you sent me. You sent me James Garner's autobiography.
I did.
And I think it's called I was a Bum Gardener.
James Bum Garner. Because you're having a colonoscopy.
Right, right. And I referred to my proctologist as a bum gardener.
Yeah.
Because I felt like that's what he was doing.
Yeah.
Yes, and that meant a lot to me. I was going through the cleanse at the time, taking a powerful. I went to the doctor recently. So I went to the doctor recently, and I got a nurse practitioner. My doctor was busy. She's incredibly popular, right? So she's hard to get an appointment. And it was something not urgent, but. And so you know how they read you like a list of like, are you still taking Dristan or something like?
Yeah.
Something you mentioned. So I sat there and she goes, are you still taking? And it was this laxative I had to take for my colonoscopy. And I was like, yes, I'm still taking an incredibly powerful, explosive laxative.
Yeah, I love it.
Daily. Was I supposed to stop? I thought I was supposed to drink a quart of this every 15 minutes.
Yeah, I'm wearing a nappy. Sorry, diapers.
Notice how I've also lost like 50 pounds.
Yeah, I'm a skeleton.
Oh, my
That's
word.
That's why I've come to see you.
Are you still? You can take that off there now. I'm no longer taking that.
Yeah.
It's just ibuprofen and, I don't know, but I've been on this placebo. It's really good. It's working out for me. I just put a little placebo under my tongue and I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm like that kind of person. That's how impressionable I. You could tell me it's a placebo. Say these are placebo. Okay, they're spurious. All right, that's great. These are ersatz pills. Okay, they don't work. All right, great. Mm. And just take one a day, and it will alleviate your symptoms. And fantastic. And I would do it, and it would work.
Yeah. Well, I'm such a hypochondriac. If you told me something was a placebo, I'd think it was real anyway.
Right. That's what I'm saying. That's how impressionable I am. Absolutely. Yeah. It would probably work.
I'm such a hypochondriac that I've even looked it up a million times. That it's something that I've got wrong with me.
Oh yeah. No, I'm an alarmist. Hypochondriac. Yeah, there's actually something there. I mean, there's a symptom. I just make too much of it.
All right, I'm an alarmist because I don't normally look things up if I've got nothing wrong with me. I used to when I was little. Mm-hmm. The Reader's Digest Family Health Guide was brilliant. I'd sit and read that all afternoon. But I'm an alarmist as well.
And the funny thing is, right. If I sit and think about it for 2 seconds, I don't really care. Like, what if I have this? What if I got? Oh, why not me? I'm fine. And even if it's true, usually I'm like, oh, well, so, you know, I'm not. You know, 9 years old. I'm fine. If something is horribly wrong, that's why not me. So I don't know why.
I'm not like that at all.
Oh,
I'm
really? You don't want to?
Oh no, I'm completely in a state of utter horror.
Oh yeah. Well, memento mori. Should I send you more imagery like that? Like, like a skeleton contemplating itself and everything to remind you that you're mortal?
Yeah, that'll help, yeah.
It will help a little bit. Yeah. It'll help you, because you got to, I can't use the word on the radio, but F it or whatever, you have to have access to that.
Yeah.
And it's got to be right, like you, someone you go, ugh. Because we were talking about how art is connected to irritable bowel syndrome and how my slogan, if it doesn't give you diarrhea, it isn't a good idea. But it doesn't really have to. But art doesn't have to do that to you, is what I'm saying. You don't. I know that you often torture yourself physically and mentally.
Unlike you.
I stopped because essentially I am not a coward. What is it when you don't like pain or you're
a coward.
Yeah, coward. There's no better word, really. I don't. And eventually, I'm like, oh, I don't want to feel miserable.
Actually, no, I think that you and I have got the same split personality types.
I mean, yeah, because I don't want to, like, I don't want to destroy myself to do a good job at something, right? Obviously, you don't want to kill the golden cow that makes the goose gold by laying eggs. But
there is a difference between, what did you just say again?
I'm not sure. But I don't want to. I've got to do it again, so I can't destroy myself. You know, making a thing. I don't want to.
Yeah.
Right? Because then you're no good to anybody.
Oh yeah, I don't believe in pain in the creative process.
No, but you have it though chronically.
Yeah. Well, I've got my split personality is I'm very Dharmic and I'm very Buddhist about things. But on the other hand, if something bad happens to me, that completely just goes out the window and everything's awful. That's my split personality.
Right. And you should be to really fully confess, let people know that this happens like every quarter of an hour. The vacillation. it isn't gradual over time.
It can happen in a moment.
The moments are divided in that way.
Well, the only thing about mindfulness and living in the moment is knowing the next moment could be awful. It's awful.
Yeah. Well, you get what you get. I mean, and so, yeah, I guess I don't know why. I think it's my mother is a very conscientious person, and I think that there's you can internalize that and say, I'm conscientious about everything. Like I'm going to care deeply about, which is great, right? But it could be exhausting. You just care. If you care deeply about everything, you're just, it does take a little toll. You have to sort of like portion out your caring.
Well, I think when you're creative as well, or not just artists, but anything that you apply yourself to, if you have very high standards, that does tend to be partnered with actually being capable of doing a very good job of something, is the very high standards, which is coupled also with a black cloud over your head.
Mm-hmm. I don't have high standards, and I'm not saying that for as a joke. I literally don't. I don't, because I'm not capable. I would have to engage in too much self-torture, I think.
Yeah.
I have to be more relaxed about things. And if out of that something good comes, or I can concentrate long enough to do something interesting or put work into something, that's beautiful. But to expect that of yourself every time, like is just, I don't know, the lazy in me.
I expect the highest, and because a lot of the time I don't have to get to the angst point because things are going all right anyway. But I mean, in the last week, I won't go into specifics, but I've been doing this tour with a team of people, making a music and visual show, and every single person was a professional in their field. So, like the best in the country at doing what they did. Every single person was saying to someone else, oh, well, it's really awful. I've got this going on with this aspect of what I'm doing. It's all going wrong. I'm so sorry. It's really terrible. And no one else knew anything about everyone else's problem, because to anyone else there was nothing going on. But everyone was having a really bad time.
Mm-hmm.
But no one knew that anyone else was, because it seemed to the general public that everything was great, and actually it was, but everyone was such a perfectionist that they knew everything that was wrong.
Yeah, gosh, that's not me. I mean, I know everything is wrong. I can't care about it. Like, I allow for it now.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? I'm just go in, you go, I'm going to, you know, you just do what I do and know that something could go wrong. And if it does, it's not the end of the world. And I can't work any other way. I think that a lot of times, so I listen to people, interviews with people who've had like popular sitcoms and all that, right? And and they always say, I had to work like 14-hour days, and we'd be doing this, and we'd be writing scripts, and I was exhausted, and I just wanted to die, and I couldn't believe it, and I can't do it for very long, and blah, 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 blah. And I go, man, that's what happens when you commodify art, and then you take artists and you put them on a treadmill like that, you know, like like rocking horse winner or something. I'm just going to keep beating this thing and getting something out of it constantly. And that's not, I don't think that's the way it works. Like, I'd be happy to have one good idea in 5 years. This idea that you got to take artists and you just got to milk them dry and then do it again. It's like, put out another album, put out another movie. You know, what do you expect? You run out of ideas.
I don't think that's to do with commodification. I think we're perfectly capable of doing that all by ourselves. You know, I mean, when I do stuff, it's not because of anyone else's demand. It's because that I'm making a product or something. It's because I actually have got loads of ideas and I'm working really hard because I've got so many. I kind of want to do as many as possible.
But you can stop. And if you're contractually obligated, you can't stop. And you're working at a different. And I know for a fact that if you were in that world, you'd be dead. You know, because there's no way, what you expect for yourself could not be done in the confines of that situation where you're treated like that. I don't know that we would do it to ourselves. Look at people who have not had artists working outside of any kind of thing like being published or and really just on the fringes, right? Say or amateurs, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes they do this remarkable thing artistically, and then their life goes in another direction, maybe. And then they do something else, and they don't do that thing again. Now, if somebody had some sort of stake in that, they would be dragging that person back like they were dragging them back into the mafia or something. I think that, we think that it's got to be a career, you got to do it all the time, we've come to expect that. And I think that art is a different thing sometimes, and I...
That happened to James Bumgarner.
Yeah.
He it says in his book that he was working such long days that he met a number of actors who were doing the same thing, and they were saying things like, I can't go on like this, and then they just died, you know. On set he was suddenly bent over with stomach pain and and Bumgarner bleeding, and that his doctor told him he had to just stop.
Right.
Because he had Bumgarner bleeding.
Yeah. I'm not saying you're horrible. What horrible things you say. Yes.
He did have Bumgarner bleeding. It's just in his book.
Yes, bleeding. I don't know.
He had a bleeding Bumgarner.
Oh, goodness. You can say that because it means... something else over there. So when you say bloody, it's just an innocent reference to the corpse of Christ, right? It's not anything horrifying.
No, bleeding away at a bloody Bumgarner.
Awful. This is not every. I gotta tell you, listen. This isn't every person in the United Kingdom is not like Vicky. She's representative of mostly everyone. Just from where? About the midpoint down? Just from halfway down? Just the south part of it.
What, of the body?
Of the body of that is England. Oh, my God. The Bumgardner part of England. That's where London is.
I said Bumgardner, not Bumgardner.
It's the same thing, isn't it?
No.
It's Baum. So, to be fair, his name was like Baumgardner, which means tree farmer or something like that, right?
I don't know.
What are you drinking? Tea?
That was water. That was water from my... I've got this bottle, right?
It's not
that,
tea?
No, it's one of these watery... You're sounding like Clay Pigeon doing an interview with an English person.
Is that tea you're drinking?
Yeah. So
are you having crumpets?
No, I've got one of these bottles where it filters it with charcoal so that you don't use more plastic, right? But the problem is, right, you drink out of it, and then when you squeeze it out, it sounds like someone's died. Hang on, I'll just drink some, then I'll put it next to the microphone. Hang on. Now, you wouldn't have heard that, but...
Nobody heard that. That's some good radio right there.
By the way, I've just dribbled it all over myself
I was
by doing that, but...
actually going to go... in anticipation.
That's what it does. It makes that sound. And on the recording of what we're making, you will hear this... that sounds like a death rattle. So every time, so basically, I went to meditation a couple of weeks ago, and we're all sitting there with our eyes closed, and like midway through, I took a drink out of my thing, and it made this noise, and everyone's sitting there like, yeah, like someone's died.
Are you sure you're drinking out of a water bottle? You could, maybe you're like sucking the blood out of a leprechaun or something, and you're so in denial that you're doing a horrific thing like that, that you're turning the screams, the plaintive wails of the dying leprechaun, and she's saying, oh, it's coming out of this bloody water bottle. It's not the leprechaun. Because the reason I say that is because on MASH one time, Hawkeye thought that it was a chicken that he heard, not a dying child. And so I'm concerned that you think it's a water bottle, but it's really like a fairy or one of your mythical English creatures that come from the countryside. Don't you have sprites and all?
Yeah. So you messaged me last night asking me about having this conversation, and I was at the allotment watering things, and you said, may your courgettes grow the size of a lamb's corpse.
No, I said a stillborn calf.
Oh, that was it, yeah.
Isn't that not accurate?
Yourself? What have you got to say for yourself about that?
Well, I was trying to say something original. I wanted it to sound poetic and slightly biblical. And so
now,
I said, may you grow a courgette the size of a stillborn calf.
How does that make you feel now that you said that in front of everyone?
Moderately ashamed, but then again, like if you're gonna open yourself up and open your heart, there's some shameful, horrible things in there.
There are, aren't there?
And I'm not making fun of stillborn calves. I'm just
or courgettes.
Or courgettes, but they're lifeless things. I mean, they're not moving. I don't know. I was just. It's something when you go for when you don't think, and then something just pops in your head.
Yeah.
And if you're an odd person, people go, oh, they mistake it for being clever or something. Oh, no, I'm not.
Yeah.
It's not cleverness. What it is, it's just I'm oddness. And
well, only you would say that without an audience, a recital is just without eye, a recital is just rectal.
Yes. Yes, I would say that. But that's probably also a little of the elderly vaudevillian that somehow crept into my soul in the 70s from watching too much TV.
Mm.
You absorb other people's culture by being a passive observer.
The funny thing about the 70s is the British and the Americans actually have the same inputs when it comes to media, because we got each other's... Well, you got our humor and we got your Westerns.
Yeah, I don't know that I don't know that that's a good trade.
No?
I don't know.
I'd rather you didn't get our Westerns and we got your humor.
Did you get our humor? We didn't get... I like how that people go, oh, British humor, it's baffling to me. It's so different. I don't know, man. You should see some other cultures. Go watch some French TV or something.
Yeah.
That was often baffling to me.
Yeah.
You know, but British, that doesn't seem very, what is it like? Like, you mean like British humor is like super sophisticated? Like, are you being served?
A carry-on movie.
Benny Hill, something like that. That sophisticated brand of British humor. Yeah.
Is that sophisticated enough for you?
Yeah, just like, oh, whoops, here's my bum gardener. That's it.
You know what I really love about the James bum gardener book is it's got a French
gum borrower.
Bum gardener.
It's bum.
It's got an
gum borrower.
Bum gardener. Gum Barbara.
Mm-hmm. Now, is, right, gum Barbara. Yeah.
It's got an introduction by Julie Andrews.
Oh, really?
Yeah, isn't that lovely?
Oh, that is nice.
I love Julie Andrews.
I didn't finish it, to be honest. Does he cover his Mita Goldberg? Is that her name? The super?
Not yet.
The super agent?
He did. Mita? Because he got all his own crew for Rockford Files because he was fed up with being manipulated. And so, yeah, he had his own crew for Rockford Files. I'm on page 187.
Yeah, his agent was what they call a super agent or something. And she would, she was like, because they would get these deals, I guess, where he was also like the executive producer and had all this say over stuff. And that's awesome, man.
I tell you what, he doesn't talk about golf a lot.
He talked about golf a lot?
There's like chapters where he just talks about golf.
Hmm. Okay.
But the thing is, I'm not interested in golf, but there's nothing more relaxing than reading him talk about it.
Yeah, golf is, I like the idea of it, don't you? I do something similar, I just don't take clubs or balls or anything with me.
Exactly, I mean, I like skiing so long as I don't have to do it.
I've done skiing without the skis, not downhill, but just like walking in the snow, or golf, you just like walking on hills and everything. So, oh, look at that.
Yeah.
Look at that water hazard or whatever. We call it a lake.
Surfing.
We would call it a lake normally and not a water hazard.
Yeah.
And I like that better. It's not a hazard. It's not bothering me. Right?
I play chess without the board. I just stare at the table for 12 hours.
Oh, I've done that. I've done that. Will you stare at a checkerboard for hours and hours?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. We probably...
And then punch someone.
I've done that. I gotta get out of here. Yes. So I'm trying to think of another book. Well, some of the books that you send me, I don't ever get around to reading.
Okay. Which ones?
You sent me one. The more interesting they seem, the less likely I am to read it.
Because what I do right with these things is when I go on. If I suddenly get enthusiastic about something,
right,
and I buy it, then the chances are, I'm very nice like this. I always think about beyond myself,
mm-hmm.
And I think, and it's normally people that I speak to, which is not many, and so it's generally you. I always, if I get something for myself, I want to share it, and if the person isn't around, then I send it to them as well. I sent you Hockney on Art, which I
mentioned earlier. That is wonderful. Because you know that
he's a genius, and mm-hmm. he's got an amazing. And in fact, the bibliography from that book has been like about 10 books that I bought as a result of that, including the Dancing Woolly Masters.
Right,
which
you sent me that
amazing book about quantum mechanics,
right,
and related areas to do things like Buddhism and that kind of thing.
Up my own physics now because I can't grasp actual physics. I even have a friend.
Yeah.
I have a friend who's a prominent physicser, and he you know, it's funny because a physic is also a type of laxative, isn't it? So, oh, I need a physic. So it always comes back to that. But he's a physics professor and researcher, and I'll ask him things, and he'll look at me like I can't even. No, you won't understand like that, and I go, oh no, he's totally right. So I try not to waste any time. I go, okay, I know I've had an expert tell me you're not really capable of understanding this. So I figure if I think I understand it, I'm making a terrible mistake. I'm grasping it wrong. I'm going to relate it to somebody thinking I understand it when, in fact, I don't. So I'm not going to pretend to understand it, and I'm going to proudly proclaim, I don't know. Say it with me, Vicky.
You don't know.
No, you don't know either. I know you don't know because I've worked with you professionally. I don't know.
I don't know.
So there you go. And
but,
I don't know. But it's interesting. It's fun to read about, though, isn't it?
Quantum physics, quite frankly, if you say you know about quantum physics, it's not true.
Right. I think
because it's the same as the Heart Sutra for Buddhist.
What's
Heart
horrifying
Sutra.
About quant? This is what's horrifying about quantum physics to me.
Yeah.
Is that that you can know enough to sort of quip or make jokes like Schrodinger cat jokes or something?
Yeah.
And you go, he's made a Schrodinger cat joke. And so you don't really have to really comprehend anything about it, right? And then, like I found out, that there's stuff in the physics that my friend works in called dumb holes and also pea brains. So I was like, oh, dumb holes. I know about dumb holes and pea brains. That's like all I got out of the thing I read. And I'll just make some dumb hole pea brain jokes. And then people go, Hardy has a grasp of physics. And you don't at all, right? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
I think there's
like
a lot of, it's
see.
Made us think, I think because we can make a joke about something, we perhaps have confused that with being an intellectual. And, because I know
like
this trick from,
up.
I know I was like a dumb guy in school, excuse me, and I interrupted people constantly. And I wouldn't interrupt you if it was your show, though.
Just carry on. You carry on with what's more important than what I had to say.
I feel bad now. No, I stepped on what you were saying. I can't forgive myself for that.
So, I forgot what I was going to say.
Oh, I know what I was going to say. I don't, though. Dang it! Oh!
Okay, so if you... Okay, well, I know what I was going to say before you interrupted me, but if when people go and see Kurt Schwitter's sonata get performed, they're standing there with their books or their printed out PDFs following it.
I know.
Sternly staring at that, like, so I'm following this, I totally understand this. And then there's a couple of lunatics at the back laughing. Now, who gets it, hey?
Oh, yeah, laughter was the original response before anybody knew what he was doing. It's like, oh, let's say, come see Court do this crazy thing. And then, you know.
Yeah.
Funs bavritetse. You know, you can't not crack up. And
that thing that happens when you laugh, of course it can be like a negative laughter where you're ridiculing, but if it's positive laughter, then you're actually seeing the magic in something. Now, the only response to things that you don't understand are often laughter, you know, when it's a positive, elevated understanding of something. Thank you.
Yes.
So the quantum physics. When we talk about the beyond and you know the structure of things in their infinite tiniest form, we can say that we've got these ideas about something that makes sense. But actually, if we actually say we know something, it goes back to that book, I Don't Know, because actually we do know. But if we try and articulate things with words, by the very nature of making them into words, we therefore are limiting our expression of that understanding, because it's the whole trap of saying there is a finite way of explaining the infinite, that the whole essence of something is destroyed, and that's the problem with words.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
See, that's pretty good what I just said.
It was, and it was it actually proved itself. That was amazing. The proof was contained within it.
So in emptiness, no form, no feeling, thought, or choice. Mm-hmm. Noise or consciousness, no eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind, no colour, sound, smell, taste, touch, or what the mind takes hold of, not even the act of sensing.
Okay, wow. Well, we don't want to go there because we like sights and we like specific sights and sounds and smells, don't we?
Uh-huh.
And
unless it's egg.
Yeah, so I'm going to ignore everything that you said. Oh, egg smell. So I got this notice in my door, and it said, notice, we're going to be putting something in the sewer.
That smells of eggs.
Right. That smells of eggs. It's like a,
right.
We're cleaning, we're scrubbing them out or something. I go, okay, well, good luck with that, right? Because it's filled with mainly poo, I think, and other things. And so they're going to put, we're going to put something in it that makes your poo pipes smell bad. I go, well, that's, okay, thanks for the heads up.
Yeah.
But it said, actually, specifically, it said rotten egg smell. Like, oh, okay. You can just say sulfur. I don't know why people say, the rotten egg imagery is worse to me if you just said, sulfur almost seems natural. You say, oh, you know what rotten eggs smell like? What? Those beautiful sulfur springs. Have you ever been to the sulfur oh, yes, very minerally. But the other way around. Rotten. There's nothing rotten about sulfur, right? It just is what it is.
Uh-huh.
I like it. I went to springs one time, and they had different kind of, you know, back in the day when people would go to medicinal springs and they would soak in different things like magnesium-rich water or sulfur. Well, some of them were sulfur springs, and they'd go, I got to get some of that poo water. It's, you know, that'll make me healthy.
But doesn't the smell of sulfur, it actually saves your life, doesn't it? Because it's poisonous, isn't it?
Oh, is it? Yeah, I guess. Yeah, it is, right? So if you smell.
Because.
Well, no, they put it in gas because natural gas is odorless. So if they give you an unpleasant odor, so you go, ooh, man, is there a gas leak? Like that?
Unless it's natural human gas.
Right. And they go, is somebody making cookies or is there a gas leak? Or you got to, it has to be unequivocal, though. It has to be like, okay, that smells bad. It can't be like, I don't know if that's fried chicken or body odor.
It when you to... get too near a volcano, there's lots of sulfur, isn't there? And people die. And so they know that when they're near the sulfur that they
also,
should go away.
And it doesn't get enough credit because there's so many more obvious visual clues. You say, I'm working hard putting out the warning smell. And the lava's going, ha, 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 ha. Our visual cues render your contribution meaningless. Because we're spewing... you know, hot, liquid hot rock. Uh-huh. And so your mere gas odor is not, I think people are staying away because of my, I identify with the lava.
Yeah, I think a lot about the very thin plate of rock that we are existing on in hyperspace going really, really fast and spinning around. And
don't,
and though.
Why are you thinking
really
about that?
Hot lava.
Why? Why would you think about that? Yeah, why not? Don't think about it too much. Don't be unnerved by it, though, right?
I think about that and James Bumgarner.
I think about him, too. I wanted him to be my father really badly. I didn't have a dad or anything. I was like, man, that guy, I think that should, I'd love him to be my father.
Yeah. Watch some Maverick. There's many of them. There's hours of them.
Yeah. I want to see Dad before he got beat up because he kind of limps around in Rockford.
Well, you know, he got his limp from being in the war.
Oh, man.
He was running and he jumped over a cliff and he damaged both his knees.
Oh, wow.
And he never got over it. It was in the war. Korean War, I think.
Yeah, I think it was Korean War. What a guy.
Yeah. I don't remember much, but I remember things like this.
You know he's my dad, right?
Sure.
He is.
Well, I remember being told that someone we knew, his uncle, was Glenn Campbell, and I believed it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Glenn Campbell?
Someone was like, also, I read somebody was like, Ross Martin is my cousin or something.
You know, I believe anything.
If you pick somebody who's... Nichelle Nichols is my aunt. Somebody told me that, too. I think if you pick somebody who's lower down on the fame thing, it's believable.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think somebody would believe me that I was related to.
Dame Edna Everidge.
I am? Related to that person?
Yeah. Do you know who Dame Edna Everidge is?
Oh, that sounds really familiar. Dame. I'm just thinking it's somebody identifies as as a woman because of Dame. Okay. And Edna. Oh, is that the
Barry Humphries?
Barry Humphries, yeah, exactly. Oh, I know who that is.
You're that was the only person I could think of.
I'd love to be related to Barry Humphries. That's not bad, right?
He's really interesting.
Oh, I imagine. Yeah, no, I'd be fine with that. Sure.
He's an art collector. He collects esoteric magical paintings.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah.
Why do you know that?
Because I like esoteric magical things.
Okay, that's wonderful. Hey, you know, do you have the book? Have I ever sent you the book Hardy on Art? Hardy on Art. It's all my musings about, you know, theory and why we create and all that. Do you have that? Have I sent that to you?
No.
Have I? I've not written it yet. Uh-huh. But that doesn't mean I haven't. That you don't have a copy.
How long isn't it?
Oh, it's a good it's a good length, but it's like it's a weird format. It's kind of lengthwise book. It's
does it read vertically? I'll tell you something that was pointed out yesterday. I never thought of. Why is the internet only vertical?
I beg your pardon?
All right, web browsers. Why are they mainly only vertical? Why is Instagram vertical? Why is Facebook vertical? Why isn't it horizontal?
So you haven't found the swipe feature?
Oh, no. Is there another internet that I've missed?
Yes, actually, there is. So go on Instagram. And then the picture, you could swipe, and it'll go horizontally for you.
What, to the outer net?
No, to
is
other
that
pictures.
The outer net?
No.
The outer net and the other net.
Oh. It's supposed to operate like pages in a book. It mimics pages.
Yeah.
So, of course, it's going to go verticals. That's how we read, right? The top of the page to the bottom of the page, and we flip the page. So it's just modeled on that. I don't think there should be pages. I think it should be one endless scroll. I think it should be more like Torah.
I think it should just be a very, very big screen that there's only one.
Mm-hmm.
And that we have to go and visit it.
Let's not have an internet anymore. Just a break. Can we just have a break? Turn it off? Just for like 5 days.
Well, it might happen at some point.
I would be fine. I'd go out and I'd volunteer at a historical recreation village.
Right. I'd never speak to you again if there was an
accident. I wouldn't be. I'd be a disruptive factor. I wouldn't be participating in their whitewashed, stupid view of history. I'd be in there being real and gritty. Being like one of my psychopathic ancestors. And then they go, here's, you want to recreate history? Here you go. That's what I'd say to them. And then I'd do something.
I'd go feral if there's no internet.
Oh, you know what they really like is you go and then be really just confoundingly anachronistic.
Uh-huh.
And they say, oh, are you wearing sneakers? You go, yeah, you know, I got a planter's wart. So I can't wear. And because it... Because it's absurd, right? So you...
That was absurd, what you just said, yes.
No, it wasn't, though.
That was a really weird thing to say, I have to say.
What, that you should be... That start your political action and dissent at historical recreation villages by being confoundingly anachronistic? There's nothing wrong with that. I think that's a good plan. Start like that. I'm not inciting anybody.
No, I would start looting, and then I'd collect lots of things from the supermarket and buy a tent.
Mm-hmm.
What else did we do in the 70s?
You don't remember.
Oh, I'd start making fake versions of what I'm doing for real now. That's what I'd do. I'd have a fake radio station like I did when I was little.
You know what I regret? It's the end of the show, so I've got to cut you off because I've got to say that station stuff and everything. But this is our public voice. You and I speak for human consumption sometimes. And we're much more, we'd be much more inclined to tease one another, which would be disturbing to other people, the level of our, wouldn't it? They'd be like, you've been so horrible.
Oh, I was teasing you.
Oh, I know, lightly, but that was like you were pulling your punches.
Yeah.
Normally they'd be full on eye gouges. You are listening to Miracle Nutrition, WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope 91.9 in New York City and Rockland County, New York, and online worldwide at WFMU.org. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you again next week.